Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, June 22nd, 2015. Good afternoon, Al. Well, we had gold down only $15 today, minus 15 at 11.86. However, silver managed to be up 12 cents at 16.30. Platinum was down 24 at 1,064, and palladium was down also 12 bucks at 699. And the USD day up 28 at 94.37. Crude oil up 7 at popped over 60 by one penny. And the paper markets today. Let's see. Paper markets today. I pulled up the wrong. I'm getting a little sidetracked here. The Dow up 104 points at 18,120. The NASDAQ is up 36. The NASDAQ is up 36 at 51.53, and the S&P up 12 at 21.22. 10-year yield 2.36, up 0.09. Euro 113, down 0.15. European markets must think there's a deal going on with Greece. Germany was up almost 4%. London was up 1.75%. Even Japan followed along at 1.25%. And so those markets soared. And I thought I saw China down once again, another 6%. But there we have it, Al.
There we have it.
There we
another
have
day
it.
In the markets. You know, it's down 15 bucks and it's annoying and the rest of that sort of thing. But it'll go back. We'll have another $15 day up. And what we are seeing is price of gold is just hovering somewhere around 1200. It doesn't get a whole lot above, doesn't get a whole lot below, at least not so far. And it just seems to $15 up, $15 down. What do you make of it?
Well, I think we're going to see gold trade between 1150 and 1220. Might not be as low as 1150, maybe 1160, but around this 1180. Well, it's been fluctuating, trading between these two marks, and I think this is what we're going to see until we have a little reason to have another little pop in the price of gold. We all know it's being suppressed. We all know it's being manipulated in bulls. And certainly when you have stock markets at 18,000, you know, there's very little interest in gold. You know, people don't see the danger. If they do see the danger, they don't pull their funds out because it's the only place they're making any money on their dividends. You know, some of these companies are paying, you know, 3, 4, 5, 7% on some of these dividends. So they're willing to keep their money in there, get that little dividend check on a monthly basis and a quarterly basis. And, you know, that's the risk people are willing to take. But for those of you who don't want to play that risk or play that game, they can always put their funds into a real currency like gold and silver. And speaking of currency, Al, last week you had the Treasury Secretary and announced, and we talked a little bit about it on the program, they were going to put a woman's portrait on the $10 bill.
Well, does she have to be dead before you can put her on the portrait?
Well, he didn't.
If so, I'm going to suggest I'm going to nominate Hillary.
Oh, what, that she's going to be dead?
Well, it's a requirement. I think the way her ego is, she might be willing to fake it just to get her picture on the $10 bill.
Well, maybe it's another one of those trans, you know, you have transgender, transracial anymore. Maybe it'll be trans.
Yeah, Caitlin on there. Now we got a little bit of the male thing, a little of the female. It could work. We could make the bill. You could distinguish the tens from the fives and the 20s and so on. We'll make a pink $10 bill. But what else did you have to say about this?
Fortunately, what they'll use is a woman who has probably had some sort of an effect on women's rights and so forth, instead of a woman like Abigail Adams, who had a lot of impact early on in the country believe in Christian and rights and morals and was a true patriot. So that's the kind of thing I would like to see. But the whole reason also that I wanted to talk about this, former Federal Reserve Chief Bernanke, he wants to abandon the plan to drop Alexander Hamilton and dump Andrew Jackson from the $20 bill. Bernanke wrote today that he's appalled by the plans to replace Hamilton with a woman. He said that adding a woman is a fine idea, but it shouldn't come at Hamilton's expense. He called the first Treasury Secretary, without doubt, the best and most foresighted economic policy in U.S. history. By contrast, Jackson, president from 29 to 37, was a man of many unattractive qualities and a poor president. Jackson opposed attempts to establish a U.S. central bank.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, now we get to the heart of why he wanted Hamilton dumped, or once Jackson dumped over Hamilton. So anyway, I thought that was interesting.
No, it is interesting, and it's kind of it's interesting from the perspective you think that the Federal Reserve has something better to do than settle accounts with enemies that go back, what, close to 200 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I would fear that'd be a mistake to assume that. They still have scores to settle with Andy Jackson. And, you know, on Jackson's tombstone, I'm told that he inscribed on his tombstone, "I stopped the banks." So, I don't know. They were enemies, no question about it. A couple assassination attempts, if I understand correctly, probably fomented by major bankers. And Jackson, of course, you know where we got the term okay?
And tell us.
It's from Andrew Jackson, and the man was so illiterate that even though he'd been a general and the rest of the serving, he was so illiterate that he thought okay meant all correct. All right? He thought you spelled all with an O and correct with a K. So he would write okay on some of his, he'd read some of these documents, he'd say, okay, all correct. That was where we got the idea. That's where we got the term okay. Interesting guy, Old Hickory. Undoubtedly tougher than nails. He wasn't well educated, but on the other hand, he knew what he was doing. He didn't need a profound education to do what he believed to be right, and he must have given him fits back in the day. In fact, if I was up to me, I'd shift him around, maybe put him on the $100 bill. We'll put Bernanke on the penny. Let's do that. How about we put Ben Bernanke on the penny, and we'll move Andy Jackson up to the $100 bill.
Put Bernanke on the Continental. Here's the Gene story that I thought you would like, Al. The Supreme Court today ruled that the government can't force raised farmers to give a part of their annual crop for less than it's worth, a victory for conservative groups that hailed the decision as a win for private property rights. And the justices ruled 8-1, and this was a 1940s program, and it was born out of the Great Depression, and it allowed the federal officials to seize personal property from farmers without fully compensating them, even though the goal was to benefit farmers by stabilizing market prices. And the court sided with farmers Marvin and Laura Horn, who claimed they were losing money under a program they called outdated and ineffective. They had been fined $695,000 trying to get around it. Chief Justice John Roberts said the program was authorized in 1937 that allowed to keep prices for raisins and other crops steady by helping to manage the supply. And I guess they put these raisins in a reserve pool to be sold outside in the open market. And then they used them for school lunch programs, or they were given away to charities and foreign governments.
Yep. I have a copy of the case here in front of me. In fact, I downloaded it earlier today. I haven't had a chance to read much of it, but it does say in 2002, 2003, raisin growers were required to set aside 47% of their raisin crop under the reserve requirement. You know what that means, Melody? It means we could get 4 scoops of raisins with our raisin bran if it wasn't for the government meddling. That's just 2. Because the government was taking half the crop. So there.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But then they were also, farmers gave up 30% of the crop in 2004 and were paid nothing.
Yeah.
So
the court did the right thing. Mm-hmm. The court appears to have done the right thing, which is sometimes almost amazing in itself, but they actually appeared to do the right thing. Although this has been going on since 1937.
Yeah.
We've had 8 years of this?
And there's other crops. It involves prunes, dates, almonds, cherries, walnuts, spearmint oil. I don't know what other USDA programs that fall into the same sort of program. And there was only one dissenter, and that was Justice Sonia Sotomayor. And she said the program did not deprive the Horns of all property rights. It just limited the amount of potential income they could earn from it.
Oh.
You know, it's just like, really?
Yeah.
I know. It's like, what planet are these people living on? Or where did they come from? You know, it's just, but.
You know, I saw an interesting article that was actually published in the New York Times on May 24th of last year. And I have no idea how this article, I thought I was looking at a current issue of the New York Times. I don't know if someone sent me a link to it or what it was, but I was much amazed. I did not hear about it a year ago, and I haven't heard of it since. And I got the letter, and I thought the article was you know, in the last week, and then I realized, oh my gosh, it's not. And what the article explains is that the Supreme Court justices have been back and revising their decisions sometimes as much as 5 years after the decision is made. And this has been going on since the beginning of this country. And in some instances, the Supreme Court has been going back and revising not only their own decisions, but previous decisions by previous courts. They might be revising decisions that were made 100 years ago or 200 years and cutting a little chunk out and put another piece in there. The Dred Scott case, which is famous to a lot of people, turns out that that Dred Scott case, after it was decided and it was the court issued the decision, one of the justices came back and added 18 pages of his own commentary to the Dred Scott decision, which is a famous case dealing with slavery and whatever. He has added 18 pages to this, and the thing about it is the Supreme Court will not admit what segments have been changed. They won't tell us where they are, they won't tell us who did them, and they won't tell us how they've been changed. Right? And the point is that the Supreme Court is actually rewriting the law. There's a little section of a precedent that they don't care for. Well, they can go back and just delete that precedent, or maybe insert a not where there was just previously an is. And the whole thing calls into question the validity of all of the Supreme Court's decisions. We don't really know if we've got the decisions available to us right now that were actually the decisions that were made at the time. And this, the only way we can find out if we have a true Supreme Court case decision is we pretty much have to get hold of a hard copy of one of the books that was published at the time and then compare it to the digital copies that are available at Find Law and Westlaw and LexisNexis and so on. This is extraordinarily disturbing. I mean, these guys are rewriting our law without giving us notice, without even refusing to tell us, okay, we did it, but we're not going to tell you where. Calls the whole idea of Supreme Court precedents into question. And from my perspective, is if they're going to be in question like that, one of the things we're going to probably see, what can we rely on? If we can't rely on the Supreme Court decisions, what can we rely on? And the answer would be the organic law of the United States of America, which includes Declaration of Independence, Articles of Confederation, Northwest Ordinance, and the Constitution of the United States. We all have pretty reliable copies of those documents, all right? So it might be, I mean, it's interesting, just extraordinary information, extraordinary arguments, implications. I don't expect a lot to come of it, but a lot should come of it. So
the other thing I wanted to touch on before we go to break, the BRICS Bank, they're to commence business on July 7th. They will be launched the first session of its Board of Governors in Moscow, and Russian officials have confirmed the new development bank will provide a financing alternative to the World Bank, where the five large emerging markets have sought more clout. The BRICS leaders also announced, of course, the establishment of the BRICS Contingent Reserve Arrangement, and that's a $100 billion fund from which the BRICS member countries will be allowed to draw funds when going through a crisis. It's going to be headquartered in Shanghai. India has already announced the first president of the bank, and, of course, this has all led up to the open membership for non-BRICS countries and it coincides with plans for the Asian Infrastructure Development Bank spearheaded by Beijing. And so that is looking to have their first session on July 7th. And I thought this was interesting. The Central Bank of Russia issued a 3-ruble silver coin to commemorate the upcoming BRICS summit. These coins will be on sale at several commercial banks. And the coin bearing the title, meeting of the BRICS heads of state, and it represents the growing clout of the group of five as they launch their new financial institutions. So I thought that was interesting. I thought it was interesting that they were able to get it out in just a couple days. I don't know how long they were working on it, but they did issue. I just thought that was interesting.
I think it's interesting that they'd issue a 3-ruble coin.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand 5 and 10. and maybe even two. Why do we get three ones and twos? We get a 3-ruble coin. That strikes me as mathematically strange.
Well, you think
I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm saying it's a little peculiar.
You think it would be the same number as the number of states that are connected to it, countries?
Maybe. We'll watch and see. We're going to take a break for some commercials, and Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adusk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
You know, the U.S. today is going to raise theft of federal personal records with China. Security talks began. They began annual security talks with China. And an official said it plans to raise this directly, the breach of the federal government server that resulted in the theft of personal and security clearance records of millions of employees and contractors. China has openly denied the involvement in the break-in. And, of course, the Obama administration says, oh, we're confident that China's government, not criminal hackers, were responsible. Now, my big question now, I mean, they're discussing these issues, cybersecurity in their annual meeting, maritime security, military relations, missile defense, nuclear policy, blah, blah, blah. When you start accusing a country of hacking into your system, I mean, it's got to be more than, hey Joe, hey, Bud, you know, you quit that. And the person that you're accusing, the country that you're accusing, has got to be, to accuse a country that they're breaking in, stealing personal and security clearance records of millions of employees and contractors, I mean, shouldn't that be a fairly severe situation?
Everybody's doing it, Melody.
You're accusing a country.
That's just showbiz. See, we accuse them, and over there they're accusing us of something. And both sides, we need to keep our people in line by posing threats. We have to let them know that there's threats from other people. So you all better do whatever the federal government tells you, because they will protect us from the dreaded Chinese. And the Chinese are doing the same thing. You better do what the Chinese tell you, the government tells you, because if you don't, they can't protect you against the dreaded United States.
Yeah, but my point is, it makes no sense. I mean, if you're hacking into these government programs for stupid employees and so forth, their personal information, I mean, wouldn't you think it would be fairly easy to get into their military? Or do they already have all their military?
I saw something back in the 1960s, if I recall correctly. I don't think it was any later than the 1970s, but I think it was the 1960s, and the United States was building a new embassy in Moscow. At the same time, the Soviet Union was building a new embassy in Washington, D.C. The Soviet Union built its embassy on the highest hill in Washington, D.C. Now, this isn't big time. I mean, it was not like we had mountain peaks up there or something. But the point was, up on that high peak, they had the maximum opportunity to intercept radio communications coming into Washington, D.C. The United States built its embassy at the lowest spot in Moscow, down the swamp, basically. And they had the least opportunity to capture radio intelligence from the other side. United States knew that the Russians had incorporated listening devices into the beams, the steel beams that were used to build the new embassy in Moscow, into the bricks and the blocks and whatever else. The place was completely wired where they could hear anything that went on inside the United States embassy. Nobody cared. They don't care what the Russians knew about us, and we didn't care, and the Russians didn't care what we knew about them particularly. What this was about was maintaining an excuse to not tell your own people what your government is up to. The Russians or the Soviet Union at the time used the United States as an excuse. Oh, gee, we can't tell all you dumb Russians what's going on here, because, golly, we've got to keep it secret to protect you against the evil United States. The United States does the same thing. We use our adversaries as an excuse to control the primary threat to our government. And what is the primary threat to our government, to the government of the Soviet Union, the government of Russia? It's the people of the United States, or the people of the Soviet Union, or the people of Russia. Primary threat to every government is its own people. And that's why they say, ooh, look at the boogeyman, look at the boogeyman, look at the boogeyman. The threat, primary threat, if the people ever knew what was going on, I think it was Henry Ford, it was attributed to Ford. He talked about the monetary system, and this goes back a century ago, basically. He said if the American people understood the monetary system, the banking system in this country, there'd be a revolution and an overthrow the following morning. It'd start tomorrow morning. So it's a good thing they don't understand. Your government is not trying to protect, is not trying to secure its information against the Chinese. They just use that as an excuse to keep you folks in the dark.
Well, here's something I found interesting. It was the USA, and this might be a common occurrence, the USA Today. The author of the article was Jim Michaels, and it's about with a shortage of U.S. Navy ships, the Marine Corps is exploring a plan to deploy its forces aboard foreign vessels.
Oh, that's great. How about Carnival Cruise Line?
Yeah, to ensure That's probably the funniest thing you said, Al,
in a long time,
I'd have to admit.
Getting there is half the fun. You join the Marine Corps, and you will be deployed on a Carnival cruise line. You know?
But this is so they can respond quickly to global crises around Europe and Western Africa. The initiative is a stopgap way to deploy Marines aboard ships overseas until more American vessels are available. Let's see. They talk of.
Do we
yeah,
need?
I know.
I mean, we've had.
I didn't know we had a shortage.
Since World War II, we've had enough, and now all of a sudden we're short on enough vessels. How many Marines are we going to land, and where are we going to land them? What are they planning for here?
The Marines have been working with Spain, Italy, the United Kingdom, and other close allies to determine the suitability of the foreign ships for U.S. personnel and aircraft. The units would be designed for limited operations and not major amphibious assaults. A ground force, they're talking about 100 to 120, would be deployed.
120 men?
Yeah.
And they need to go buy special boats? Can't they buy, I don't know. There must be something you could buy that will carry 100 people across the ocean.
Here it says the U.S. Navy has 30 amphibious ships, but says it needs 38 to fulfill warfighting requirements. Mm-hmm. It won't reach that level until 2028 because of budget constraints.
Yeah, that's the point of all of this. This ultimately is a reflection of the fact the government's going broke.
Broke.
That's what the problem is. And they're cutting back, for the moment, they're cutting back on the military, which has been, you know, sacred cow here for a considerable period of time, for, you know, since World War II anyway. And just recently, in the last decade or so, it's no longer quite as sacred as it's been in the past. And the day is going to come when, what else is sacred, Melody? So-so security.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. They're going to be capable of working that out before it's done, where you're going to have to be 85 before you can retire. And that'll be on half. And if you want the full amount, you'll have to be 90.
And the poor Greeks are unhappy because they're talking about raising their, what, 54 to 56?
Yeah, I understand.
And we're going to be 100. But the one more thing to this article, it says in addition to technical requirements such as testing the ability of the ships to carry U.S. Article aircraft and equipment, they would have to reach agreements separately with individuals or operate under NATO authorities.
Well, you know, this is one of the problems. We've got this privatized government, where we have contracted out a lot of governmental obligations to private corporations. And they are considering doing the same thing with hauling Marines to some foreign shore. Look, if you're going to have a war, if you're getting involved in this stuff, it seems to me that you ought to be able to fight the war with your own ships and planes and tanks. Shall we cut a deal with Russia, or maybe we could borrow? Could I borrow a battalion of tanks? We're going to invade. We've got another country to invade here. We're a little short. Mr. Putin, could we borrow a battalion of tanks? It gets a little weird. If you're going to have a war, you ought to at least fight it with your own men and your own equipment. And if you're not going to fight with your own men and equipment, you put yourself in a position of jeopardy. You are depending. You're going to sign a contract with who? To supply ships to move our Marines to where? And what happens if the situation changes over the course of the next several years and we sign a contract with Spain to move people to Africa, and Spain and subsequently engaged and enters into some sort of a treaty with Africa, and now we can't rely on Spain to haul our men to Africa, and instead of shooting, we'll take them to court. Maybe it's a good thing, Melody. We'll settle all our disputes in court rather than on the battlefield. What do you think?
Maybe. I don't know, but I thought that was another. It just needed some attention.
A sign of the times, mm-hmm. And you know, it's a sign that things are curiouser and curiouser. Yeah. They are just stranger and stranger, and the reason is because the government is going broke. And why is the government going broke? in large measure because the government has insisted on giving us a fiat currency, and now they're in a position where they can't effectively raise taxes much more on the American people, and they can't borrow much more because they're already perceived to be legally insolvent. It's more difficult to find lenders willing to lend the government, so where are they going to find the money? And the answer is they're not, which means they're going to actually have to cut back, which, who knows? Silver lining, maybe. Maybe it's a good thing. You know, less government, in the end, less government may be better. Good thing for all of us. So.
Ultimately, it could be better. Yeah. But we have real estate. It's saying it's got hot again. Sales are on pace for the best year since 2007. They say first-time buyers are streaming back into the market. But what I found interesting about the report was that they're going in there because they're concerned that they're going to be priced out of the market by rising mortgage rates. And rates haven't even risen yet. They haven't even raise the rates yet, and I can only imagine this economy when rates get to 3.5% and 4%. So this is why you're seeing the mad dash. It's because they can't afford higher rates. So once those rates begin rising, that's one part of the sector of the economy that will just come to a screeching halt, and that's home buyers.
Well, the rates have been rising, according to some reports, just because people have been investing in the homes.
Yeah, well, just
they've
wait.
Been taking, yeah, I understand. They've just, they think this, it's been artificially, I think they said that the price of homes was going up something 16% at the same time that American wages had gone up. Something like 4%. I don't remember the time frame, but 5 years since 2008, whatever it was, I don't recall. Prices are up 16%, but income is only up 4%. All right. Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out, look, on average, the middle class, if they're only getting a 4% raise, they can't continue to chase homes that are going up at 16%. There's going to be a moment when people finally say, once again, gee, I can't afford this house. I'm going to have to abandon it. It's underwater. You know, it looks to me like we'll watch and see what happens. It's cause for a certain amount of celebration right now because it'll put more people to work as we build more homes, but they tend to be on the expensive side. And almost inevitably, it's like giving liar loans to people who are living in poverty and saying, go ahead, tell us you make $100,000. We'll believe you, $100,000 a year, and we'll lend you the money because the government will buy the loan from us as soon as we ink the deal, so we're covered. We make ours, and whatever happens after that is between you and the government. We're seeing something like that right now, where it's not quite the same as liar loans, but people who are perhaps not really qualified are buying more homes. We'll watch and see. Here's an article that's a little bit along those lines. Bureau of Labor Statistics releases May inflation stats. May's monthly price increase, monthly prices increase 0.51%, but the annual inflation rate was still a negative 0.04%. Okay? We have been, and they go on to say, this is the fifth deflationary month in a row. When we're talking about negative inflation, we are talking about deflation. We are now in the fifth deflationary month in a row. And the reason I mention this is because if you are going to borrow money in a period of deflation, you're going to have to pay off your debt with more valuable dollars. Now, it's hard to say. We don't know how far this deflation is going to go or how significant it's going to be in terms of magnitude. But nevertheless, we've had five deflationary months in a row, according to Bureau of Labor Statistics. And that suggests that we might have six or seven before we're done, or maybe more than that. It is a signal that if we're going into deflation, sensible people probably, they need to think more than once about whether they want to take out any loans. If they have to be repaying their dollars with more expensive dollars, you borrow $100,000 today, when you pay it back, you pay back $100,000, but the dollars are worth $110,000. You're losing 10 $10,000 purchasing power. And it's kind of an invisible loss, but I guarantee it's there and it's real. You can't see it on the paperwork, but it's there. And it will tend to push you into bankruptcy if you've borrowed that money. So insofar as people are flocking into the housing industry right now, they see that perhaps interest rates are going up. But I wonder if they're paying much attention to whether we are likely to continue on into more deflation or not. I wonder if they're factoring that into their decision. What do you think, Melody? Are they or are they not? Or should we discuss that when we return from a commercial?
We're ready to go to break.
Okay. Let's take our break for our second bundle commercials. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be back. Please stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Studies have shown that the farm soil we get our vegetables from is dead, meaning it is depleted of minerals. Sulfur is a mineral. Sulfur has been depleted from the soil, which means most people have been depleted of sulfur. Sulfur has been found to transport oxygen throughout the body. You need oxygen. You need organic sulfur. American Voice Radio Network has organic sulfur. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com and then to the Superstore to order your organic sulfur. It's your choice. Do you want to feel better or not? Don't forget to tune in to the Sulfur Hour Plus One on AmericanVoiceRadio.com Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Oh, we wanted to finish up the your question. Could you repeat the question, please?
No, I can't remember the question, Melody, but I'll tell you, I can do something instead. It's like I can no longer balance a ball on my nose, but I can. I can balance a book on the top of my head. It's part of my posture training. You understand? Here's something from the same article I was reading from on the Bureau of Labor Statistics and noting that we've had 5 months of deflation. But they go back also and they compare this to cumulative inflation. All right. And they have a graph here, which you folks can't see, of course, but the graph is interesting, and I'll tell you why. It calculates the total amount of inflation we've had from 1913 to this year, 2015. So we've had almost one century of inflation. And in that time, we've had 2,326% inflation in what translates into 98 years. This means that something that cost $100 in 1913 would now cost $2,426. Huh? And if you could see the graph that's here, you would also see that they started out in 1913 at 0% inflation, and then they just kind of bounced along until 1940 without much difference in inflation. And then starting about 1940, it starts to jump, and that's shortly after we went off to the domestic gold standard. And it goes up at an angle of maybe 10 degrees on the graph. And then, at just after 1970, 71, all of a sudden it starts moving up at about a 55-degree angle, maybe 60-degree angle. All right? And what happened in 1971, thereabouts, we went completely off the gold standard internationally. We went off the gold standard domestically, 1934. We went off the gold standard internationally, 1971. And that's when the inflation really took off and started fire. The cumulative inflation as of 1971 or thereabouts, from 1913 to 1971, translates into, what, 57 years or something like that, 58 years. Cumulative inflation was 306%. All right? Not so bad. But from 1971 on until today, it's gone up to 2,328%, meaning we essentially had 2,000% inflation in the last 45 years. Eh? In your lifetime, folks. You know, I talk about this once in a while on the program, but you'll see movies, TV dramas, Rest at Perry Mason is one that I kind of enjoy from time to time. And you'll see people that are suing over $20,000 or whatever. Today, that's regarded as triviality. But back then, when they were making those black and white movies, the $20,000 was 20,000 silver dollars, right? Which would be equivalent to at least $400,000 today. You can look back and you can see how the monetary system has changed. I remember my first job. Back about 1958, 59, somewhere in there, I don't remember exactly. I was in junior high, probably about 1958, seventh grade, something like that. I don't recall
it
exactly.
Seems so long ago.
Yeah, it seems like it, but it's really not, Melody.
No, it isn't.
You'll see. First job, 85 cents an hour. And I was just working an hour or two every night after school. And the average person would sit back and say, 85 cents an hour? Why do you even bother going to the job? Why would anyone work for 85 cents an hour? 85 cents an hour back then was 85% of a silver dollar. You understand? Today, that would be the equivalent of me making something like $16, $17 per hour as a seventh grade kid. From that perspective, you can see that, yeah, working a couple hours after school, you could make the equivalent of $35, $40 in today's money. So it was a very sensible thing, take a job for 85 cents an hour. That was a good deal. And here we are today. It illustrates that although we may have had 5 months in deflation recently, it illustrates we've had long-term inflation in this country, and it has been huge. It's been massive. Back then, you could work. You understand that? Minimum wage, they talk, oh, we need a $15 minimum wage. Where is that? It's less than I was making when I was a seventh grader working a couple hours after school just sweeping up in a garage. It gives you a perspective on where this country is, where it's been. It gives you a perspective on where it's going. Yeah. You see those numbers pre-68, think in terms, you see those dollars multiplying by 20 or 25. That gives you a real perspective on what the money was if you're looking at one of those older movies. You see, well, we have had extraordinary inflation. I don't know that we've made any gains. We're sitting back and they say, oh, we need $15 an hour minimum wage. Well, all right, that's probably okay. I don't have a complaint with it. But how is that better than 85 cents an hour back when I was a kid? And in fact, it's probably not as good.
Well, that's the wage they...
money at 85 cents an hour back when I was a kid than grown men are making at 15 bucks an hour today.
Well, you're using the $15 mark as a wage that they want, but what they're really getting paid is $7, $8, $9. So
well, by
that's
the time
what
the
really,
government gets
that's,
paid.
That's what really... no, they're getting paid $7 and $8. Minimum wage is what, $7? So... but these people want $15. They're not getting paid $15 yet. They
no,
want $15.
Well,
so put it into real, well, some, but the ones that want the $15 in their place, it's much worse as they're only getting paid $9 or $10. Right. So that really puts it into perspective.
Yeah. They've been beaten up and taken advantage. And it's how do you get taken advantage? Somebody comes up and says, we're going to give you a $500 a month bonus. And we say, yay, $500 a month. But at the same time, inflation has just gone up by 50%. Now, I'm just pulling a number out of the hat here. How are you, money ahead or money behind? You know, the government acts as if it's doing us a favor by giving us $15 an hour minimum wage. If the government wanted to do us a favor, they wouldn't have subjected us to all of this inflation in the first place. And we could still be working for 85 cents an hour. And be glad to have it. You understand? And who's one of the main beneficiaries of people who are making $15 an hour rather than 85 cents an hour? And the answer is the Internal Revenue Service and the income tax. What was my tax liability on making 85 cents an hour back in the day? Not much. What's my tax liability on making 15 bucks an hour? The government, by raising our rates, by inflating the currency, by causing us to make more dollars and more dollars that are worth less and less, but more dollars numerically, they increase the amount of money they can claim under income tax. Who's growing thanks to inflation? Government. You know, and it's not a surprise, and it's not just hyperbole. Why does government grow? Because inflation favors debtors. Deflation favors creditors. It's terrible. Deflation is terrible for debtors. It's great for creditors. They're getting paid back with more expensive dollars. Inflation favors debtors while they rob the creditors. Creditors are getting repaid with cheaper dollars. They're getting beat out of their money. They're getting beat out of the purchasing power. They get it. They borrow. They lend $100,000. They get $100,000 back. But by the time they get their $100,000 back, it's only worth $90,000 in terms of purchasing power. Inflation favors debtors. Who's the biggest debtor in the world? Government of the United States. Right? It just absolutely follows. Of course, the government wants inflation. They want it to knock down the real value of its debt. They are the world's biggest debtor. They want inflation, inflation, inflation. And what they're doing is they've seen 5 months of deflation. This has to be very disturbing for them. They're looking for 2% a year, and according to the report we have from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, we actually have deflation, net deflation, over the course of the last year. All right? What are we going to do about that, Melody? Can the government, how much deflation can the government survive before it has to admit that it can't pay its debts?
Oh, I'm not sure anyone knows that number out.
Well, I understand. I understand. I don't know it either, but the point is there is a number. You know, and
I'm not so sure it's a matter of what the Federal Reserve can handle. It's a matter of, you know, again, the confidence game worldwide. And you know, they might be able to handle more, but if there's that particular event or something that causes the pressure and the elimination of that confidence of the system, it doesn't matter because it will still come crashing down.
Well,
but,
and it's got to happen sooner or later. And it's one of the things that, you know, if anyone looks into this, the average American doesn't have any understanding of money other than how to count it. But if you do a little study, and you do a little research, you begin to realize that all fiat currencies go boom sooner or later. They fall down, go boom. All right? They disappear, they cease to work. Much like the Zimbabwean dollar. People listening to this program are probably familiar with what happened to Zimbabwean dollar, the incredible hyperinflation. At times, I don't know if it was 1,000,000,000% or more a year, but it was just fantastic amounts of inflation. And the price of the currency was changing before your eyes. If you took a Zimbabwean dollar, you accepted it as payment for something today, you couldn't wait till tomorrow to use it to buy something else. You had to sell it almost use that Zimbabwean dollar almost instantly to get something else, something tangible from someone else. I don't care what they're selling, get something tangible. Buy some cigars, buy a table, buy a desk, buy some food, buy a car, buy something, but something tangible, get rid of that paper. We're going to see a moment like that. It is inevitable when you're dealing with, well, I won't say in a moment like Zimbabwe per se, but we're still going to see all fiat currencies die. They fold up under the weight of their own debt. And everybody who's still holding them, they lose their assets. All right? They're holding their wealth in terms of fiat currency or paper debt instruments denominated in the fiat currency. When that fiat dollar dies, the paper debt instruments like stocks, bonds, pension funds, savings accounts, all of them just become essentially worthless, or at least devalued to the point where they're nearly worthless. Devalued by who knows? At least 50%, probably 80 or 90%, maybe more than that. We don't know when that's going to happen, but we do know that it's going to happen. Right? It's going to happen. Might happen this year, might happen in, who knows, 5 years from now. I don't know. But because we don't know, it's one of the reasons why, if you're sensible, you take however much money that you have, how much currency you have, and you try to get it, you try to protect your wealth. Your wealth is in that currency. Your wealth is in those paper debt instruments. You try to protect your wealth by saying, do I want to keep my wealth in the form of a paper debt instrument that I know will inevitably, maybe this year, maybe 5 years from now, don't know when, but it's going to come to a point where it's virtually worthless. Do I want to run that risk right now? Or do I want to get some gold or silver? Because if I do, my wealth will be protected. And we will have an opportunity to, when the rest of the world is digging in garbage cans looking for something to eat, those of you who have stored your wealth in the form of a medium that is not destroyed by inflation, deflation, or government manipulation, that your wealth in that physical, tangible form of gold or silver, you know, there's other physical forms that you can do. You can do land, you can do a bunch of different things, but in terms of liquidity, something that you can spend and use. Right? Hard to beat gold and silver if push comes to shove, and that's what we think is going to happen. Push is going to come to shove. And when it does, those of you holding on to paper debt instruments are going to be, you know, in my opinion, you're going to be hurting. And those of you who have saved your wealth and preserved it in the form of gold or silver, you're going to be saying, I think we can get through. I think we got enough to make it. We are about out of time for our Monday program. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Attisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. Last year,